back to Troubleshooting Agile. Hi there, Jeffrey.
Hi, Squirrel.
And hello to Sameet, who's joining us as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Sameet is the author of a new book called Async Agile, and he's here today to talk to us about the kind of problems that people have experienced, including himself. So before we get started, Sameet, perhaps you can give us a bit of your background and what led you to creating this book.
Yeah, sure. So I work for an IT services firm called ThoughtWorks. We build software for all sorts of corporations around the world. I work out of India, and pretty much all of my life, I've worked for corporations in another part of the world, sometimes in Australia, sometimes in Europe, sometimes in North America. And that basically means collaborating across time zones. And one of the things that we've discovered, actually, my book is not just my ideas. I've stolen a lot of ideas from my colleagues and learned from them. One of the things we've discovered is that if we get highly synchronous and start following every agile practice in its synchronous form with a distributed team, and now distributed teams are pretty much a reality everywhere, you quickly burn out the team and you leave very little time for deep work. You sacrifice work-life balance. And there are a lot of those problems that you start to experience. And so what we've been doing is trying to inculcate a few more asynchronous practices where everyone doesn't have to be at the same place at the same time. And that same place could be a virtual space. And there are certain activities you can still do in your own time while you reserve the synchronous time for really high stakes kinds of exercises.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. But I want to go back a little bit more to your background to kind of say how you ended up here. You say you work for ThoughtWorks in India. And for people who don't know, ThoughtWorks has been a very long time IT consultant and focusing on project delivery with an agile approach. So you were very well versed in sort of synchronous agile before adopting the asynchronous approach, I think. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So for many years, I used to run ThoughtWorks' global induction program where it was synchronous to the point where anyone who joined us anywhere in the world would come all the way to Bangalore. And then, of course, I moved to Pune. So the program moved to Pune with me to Pune to train for 6 weeks. And it was an entirely synchronous program. And of course, you know, we've had offices. Our offices were all open offices. Everyone would sit around a dining table. So I think until 2016, my practice of Agile was 100% synchronous.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then so suddenly in 2016, your world changed. What was the change for you in 2016? Of course, everyone else's world changed later, but it sounds like you were an early adopter of the change. What happened in 2016?
Yeah. So until then, I always still was serving distributed clients, but I mean, this is an era where Zoom wasn't as prevalent. So, you know, you had to do those calls on those old call bridges. So we used to do those kind of calls. I mean, there was a precursor to Zoom. I think it was Fuse that we were using back in the day, where it was horrible. So our calls used to be few and maybe one a day, maybe two a week or something like that. But the rest of my team was still in my physical proximity. But in 2016, I got staffed onto a team because ThoughtWorks is a services organization. So I got staffed onto a team as a product manager. And I was managing a data visualization platform for another company. And that platform had multiple squads, some in Central Europe, some in Eastern Europe. So between Germany, Belgium, Belarus, and Ukraine, that's how the team was spread out. And I was the only person sitting in Pune. So now I didn't even have the comfort of my immediate team being in my physical proximity. So everything that I'd learned about synchronous agile seemed to fall apart, because now if I had to practice agile in its synchronous form, my entire day would be littered with meetings. And my role is that of a product manager. So I have to get into prototypes, which I want to test with my users. I want to figure out how am I going to drive this hypothesis and figure out an experiment to work out to either prove or disprove that hypothesis. I didn't have time for any of those things. So I had to figure out how I'm going to spend my time and get the most out of my day. And that's where I started to do a little more async work.
Fantastic. So this has led to you to be an early adopter, which I imagine then you had kind of a bit of a toolkit put together when it came time for COVID, and suddenly many more people found themselves distributed, even if not as many time zones as you were in, but definitely not all being able to practice face to face. Did your prior experience help you help other people bridge that?
Yeah. So I'd like to think I was able to help all of my 4,000 colleagues who were in India, but no, it's hard for one person to do it. I was able to help the teams that I was on, but I realized that if any of this change is bottlenecked by my experience, then, you know, it's doomed from day one, which is when I had the idea of starting the website that I run now, which is called asyncagile.org, to try and at least put some tools and methods out there, and then to write the book, because a book scales more than an individual.
Right. And now when we got into that world, and you know, we like to start on the podcast talking about symptoms, what are the symptoms you saw and that our listeners might be experiencing that tells them that maybe they're doing something not quite right in their distributed agile approach? What are the things where they might be feeling pressure?
Yeah, so I was, at that very time, I was working on a payments modernization project with one of those legacy payments giants. And for 2 months, I was working till 2 in the night, even though I felt like I was pretty good with async, because I was having to collaborate with clients who were on the West Coast in North American winter. And that started taking a toll on my life. But what I noticed around me is my team had very poor diversity, because I'm sure this is as true in the Western world as it is in India, that women bear a disproportionate share of household responsibilities. So any kind of work setup where you have to do these crazy hours and you have to be there at a specific time becomes very difficult to include women in. So diversity suffered, work-life balance suffered. Again, in my role, I started to see that if I'm burnt out and if I have my day littered with meetings, I'm not able to do any deep work. One of the problems with synchronous agile, which we didn't experience because our projects at that time in, you know, pre-2016, at least the projects I was working on weren't as complex, right? But now with the complexity of a large modernization project, we had decision records, we had lots of conversations to go through. We had technical design to go through. And if you try to keep everything in conversations in your heads, firstly, sharing that information and then, you know, resharing that information after the fact becomes really difficult because nothing's written down. It's in people's heads. So the only way you share that information is to have another meeting and another meeting and another meeting. And it just wasn't scaling because that program that I was on at that particular time was 100 people at its peak. And then with the lack of knowledge, what was happening is people didn't have the courage to take decisions, because for every decision, you would call a meeting which needed 10 people, to the point where if a developer wanted to design a class a certain way, he would call a meeting with 5 other developers to say, okay, is this design the right design? Where you can imagine
and that meeting might be at 1 in the morning. The meeting might be at 1 in the morning your time, Sumit, right? So that was what was killing the work-life balance for everyone as well.
Correct. So all of those symptoms that you start to see, and we had to do something about it, at least on that particular team, which is where I said, okay, I've done this before. Why don't we try it another way?
And so what did you change? What was different? What might our listeners do if they're suffering from the same kind of thing, whether they're in different time zones or just that they have a lot of complexity and need to get things out of people's heads, that the repeated meetings aren't working for them? What sorts of things can people try?
Yeah, so the way we went about it is, look, it's very difficult to make change if... Firstly, the business isn't bought in, and if the team isn't bought in. So we've got to ask ourselves, why are we changing things? So in that particular circumstance, we had to pause and we had to talk to the business and say, look, this isn't working. We are probably not delivering at the level of productivity you'd expect from us. So we need a pause to be able to rethink our workflow. So we went through, in this case, a synchronous exercise where we reflected on the kind of value that we'd like to get from the work we were doing. And people did say that they'd like to have more time for deep work and a little more work-life balance. So we then started prioritizing tweaking our processes in those directions. So first things first, we sat down and said, okay, we think we understand our process, but we've never written it down. And when we've not written it down, every one of us is imagining our process. So we went into, at that time we were using Jira as our task board. We said every stage in our process is going to be reflected in Jira. So let me give you an example. One of the things we would do is after a development pair would finish developing a story, they would call a product manager and a QA to see, have we done this right? And frankly, it was just a matter of going through the checklist to say, have I followed the acceptance criteria? And has the QA written down what tests you need to have fulfilled? And if you go through the checklist by yourself, you don't need that meeting with the QA and the product manager anymore. So we went ahead and wrote down the process and created those checklists inside of Jira to ensure everything is automated. We then said, okay, we'll get into a little more discipline with meetings. Meetings will only have the people who are absolutely necessary, and then we will document it for everyone else's benefit. We started adopting things like decision records. Meetings that were unnecessary because of our tooling, for example, stand-up meetings, we got rid of them. So we had our integrations with Bitbucket on. You would always know what had happened on a story. And if anyone had to give a more detailed update, they would just drop it in the notes in Jira. And you would always know the current status of a task. So that made our stand-ups redundant. We would still catch up for a developer huddle once a week for us to discuss the whole backlog of items that we'd like to prioritize with the clients. But that was because we had a lot of time free, and it was also a social gathering for the team. So those were some of the tweaks we made first up, and that freed up a lot of time for us and ensured that we weren't having to do many of those meetings that we were doing right at night, or even just reduce the quantum of meetings in a big way.
So Sumeet, you got me very worried there, because that it's probably some of our listeners, you know, they listen to us when they're driving, and I hope some of them haven't swerved off the road when they heard you say, you know, we got rid of our stand-ups, because that's a pretty big heresy. And it also does worry me. I like heresy, but it worries me that you might have problems with language. For example, I had a client, and they're all synchronous. They go to the office pretty regularly. They work from home sometimes, but they're in the same time zone. They're working together frequently. And they had a massive misunderstanding about the meaning of the word expansion. They had a team that was working on expansion, and the product manager said, I don't want anything to do with that. We don't need to expand right now. We're doing something else. And only by one person being persistent and saying, I really think this word actually doesn't mean what you think it means, did that person and a number of other folks discover that what that team was working on was really vital. And I just worry that if you're doing this all asynchronously and in Jira, someone might say, well, I don't need to read those updates. I don't need to hear about that. I know that doesn't affect me, but it actually does. How did you avoid that kind of language drift?
Yeah, it's a real concern. I wouldn't disagree with that. But here's what happens on distributed stand-ups anyway, is as against the physical stand-up, where we would all stand up, stand by a wall, by virtue of the fact we were standing, the meetings would be short. There'd be a token that would get passed and people would speak on their turn. So you never were unsure of who is speaking next. There was a certain rhythm to a physical stand-up. In a virtual stand-up, it's often a tooth-pulling exercise, because firstly, you don't know who's speaking next. Second, people are with their video off, sometimes mic on mute, and they're not paying attention to what anyone else is saying anyway. They're just waiting for their turn to speak, or the project manager to say, okay, Sumeet, it's your turn to speak, give your update. And then they speak and then they tune off. So the risk of not catching updates exists anyway in a virtual stand-up. The idea is that if you're keen on following an update about a specific thing, in a virtual stand-up, you have a way to be able to get that in an asynchronous stand-up mechanism, you have a way to get that information. The other thing is that with the asynchronous stand-up is that there are times that people will be either sick or on leave. And there are things that often get discussed in an asynchronous stand-up and they're never documented anywhere. And then this person comes back from leave in a fairly complex project and the only update they get is, oh, but we discussed that in stand-up. And it's often a shock for them. So if there is an easy way to consume these stand-ups in one place, which we were able to automate through Jira and Confluence, it then becomes an easy way for them to figure out, okay, last 5 days that I was away, what happened in stand-ups, right?
Understood. But Sumeet, I'm still worried because you've convinced me, at least our listeners shouldn't be driving off the road with the idea that maybe you'd have some replacement for a stand-up in terms of daily synchronization, however you might put that. But I'm still very worried about somebody ignoring updates. It's so easy to do, and ignoring something that someone else might be doing that might be important to them. If it's an email, that's really easy to delete. If it's a language mismatch, then you're unlikely to overhear somebody discussing it. You're unlikely to have something as an agenda item in a meeting that you would pick up. There's a lot of things that happen, as far as I can see it in the clients I work with, that happen because people are brought together and they have relatively high bandwidth, and that helps them align on what words mean. And I'm concerned that there'd be this drift of language, no matter whether you're having a stand-up or not. Have you seen that? Have you dealt with that? What do you do about that?
Language is a big problem. Look, I'm in a country which speaks 500 odd languages, and there are 28 official languages, right? My mother used to speak a different language. My dad used to speak a different language. And by the way, many of us don't speak English as a first language, but English happens to be our business language. So speaking in a multicultural setup isn't always the best way of communicating, because oftentimes what happens is, I had an English education in India, and of course I have many years of experience, a lot of tenure in the company. In my kind of multicultural situation, somebody like me who's got the experience, the English fluency, and the expertise is most likely going to overpower in a speaking conversation. Somebody who comes from a regional language background doesn't have the expertise, doesn't have the fluency, right? So language is always a problem. It's the good thing with written communication is that if there is a misunderstanding, and then written communication needs to be in a format where you're able to converse in line. So for example, I write a line, you misunderstand it, you give me feedback on that line, I clarify the line, and I can maybe even reword the line based on your feedback. And that happens all the time. So for example, with any of our technical discussions or any of our product discussions, we first write up a document with the idea. Then there's a lot of critique that happens, which goes back and forth throughout the design process. And oftentimes we get stuck on words. We have to give up words, or we have to rephrase words. And I consider that as an iterative process of the entire discussion.
Fascinating.
And it occurs to me, as I hear you describe this, Sumeet, is that there's an idea here that you're saying here with this async first, is you're kind of saying the reality is many of us are now working in complex distributed projects. And so this is really something aimed at some people who are like, look, if you're distributed, then you should be adjusting and you should consider async. What's the level of distribution that you think, and this is a bit provocative, what level of distribution would you say, yes, we should go async first? I mean, maybe the strongest way to put this is, if you had the opportunity to work with a co-located team where you're all in the same office, would you go back to doing your face-to-face agile practices, or would you adopt the async approach? Were some hybrid? Or is this something that you think, no, this is really something for people who are distributed, then you need to bring async in? Where do you bring in async?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because Martin Fowler and I went back and forth on this, and this is part of the point that he mentions in the foreword for the book as well. And now that I've experienced both worlds, I would say that even if you're co-located, you should not be 100% synchronous. And I'll explain why. Look, back in the day when we would sit around a table, if I needed something and you were sitting beside me, I would just tap you on the shoulder and say, can you help? Now, what I would have done in that particular scenario is disturbed your flow. And sure, I would have got my answer and I would have stayed in my flow, but you would have had to go and pick up the context, which anyone who's done any kind of creative work knows is a big disruption. So in those kinds of circumstances, what we're discovering is it's always good to take some time and say, all right, let me at least write down where I am with my problem. What's got me stuck? And often just the process of writing down what I was trying to achieve, where I got stuck, can uncover a solution for you. That's one part of it. But what that also does is you can share that written understanding of your problem with somebody, and they can then take a look at it in their own time. They can wrap their head around the problem. And then when you get together, you're going to have a much more intelligent discussion about that particular problem that you were facing. You're not going to have an immediate solution, but we should not equate speed and quality. Sometimes it's okay to slow down. Sometimes it's okay to take the best decision that is available to you in the circumstances, because again, with the advancements in continuous delivery, I can say about 90-95% of decisions that we make on software teams are reversible. So sometimes we don't know, but we can make a best guess. We go ahead, we document the decision that we've made for everyone's benefit. We ensure that we bring it to the attention of the people who absolutely must see it, because they're probably doing some dependent work. And then we need to have the humility to backtrack and change if we get feedback that says our decision was wrong.
So, Sumit, you just said something very important there, which I just want to check on. You said, when we do get back together and we discuss it. So that sounds like you're describing a process that I'm sure you're familiar with and some of our listeners too. At Amazon, everybody sits for 20 minutes of every meeting reading a document before discussing it. And I'm not saying that's what you're proposing, but that sort of notion that you read something, you reflect on it, you do it in your own time, and then you discuss it is something that wasn't quite coming through to me before. Did I hear you right, or am I misunderstanding?
Absolutely spot on. I mean, that's exactly why I don't call it the async only method. I call it the async first method, which is you start asynchronously, and then if you need to, you go sync.
So would you do things like one-on-ones or feedback to someone saying, hey, your code isn't really up to snuff, squirrel, you need to improve your use of unit tests? Would those things happen asynchronously, synchronously? How do those difficult conversations happen in your world?
Yeah, so this is where we need to figure out what the balance is, right? Going asynchronous gives us some benefits. Going synchronous gives us some benefits. Now, for example, that feedback conversation that you talked about, it depends on the strength of the relationship. If the relationship isn't strong enough for someone to interpret your words in the right way, I would suggest that you have that conversation synchronously. Build up the relationship to the point that people are not going to misinterpret your words, right? One-on-ones, I feel, are probably the best way of building relationships in distributed teams. So I do them all the time. I will keep pairing, for example, as a way of practicing deep work. And guess what? If your day is not littered with meetings, you have a lot of time for pairing. And one of the things that we've practiced on our teams is this notion of a baton pass, where there is a set of core hours where the team works and they pair during that time. And the rest of the time is flex time, right? So you can do 4 hours together and do your remaining 4 hours any way that you want. And in those 4 hours, we pair very seriously with no disruptions whatsoever. And that's a good way of being able to learn from each other. So those are some synchronous activities that I always will advocate for and keep in teams.
Got it. Well, this is growing on me, Sumit. I came in skeptical. I'm still skeptical because I'm still concerned that what could happen if you rely so much on writing, if you have so little synchronous opportunities with high bandwidth to interact. This is going back to a famous graph by Alistair Coburn, where he has forms of communication across the bottom and effectiveness of the communication on the left. And if you're at the left, you're high effectiveness, and that's things like two people at a whiteboard or two people on the phone. And if you're on the right, that's written communication, writing an email to somebody, sending them a letter. Now, I think you'd disagree with that. I think you're saying, hey, wait a minute, Alistair, your information's outdated there, because there are some real advantages to having those low bandwidth interactions. It gives you a chance to think about it. It gives you a chance to interact without messing up the work-life balance. It gives you better diversity. But you need to balance that with the high bandwidth communications for more difficult conversations, for building relationships, for pairing. Did I hear you right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't believe that this is choosing one over the other. This is saying that we've been far too synchronous in certain circumstances. We just need to embrace as much asynchrony as our project situation will allow.
Okay.
I'll say something. I mentioned from my personal background, which is as I hear this, I'm reminded of way back in the 90s, I started a company called Open Avenue. And our thesis was that in the future, effectively all development was going to end up being distributed development. And so we were building a web-based version control and collaboration tools. Basically, and our idea was that the problem of distributed collaboration and distributed development was going to be a big change, and that it had been solved by the open source community, that open source projects inherently run distributed. And our prediction was that in the future, more development would be run the way open source projects are run, because they would be run distributed. So this is—
Hey, Jeffrey, your prediction was right.
Yeah. And to see the elements that you're describing here, there's a lot of that coming through, that the advantage of having things in writing, although the advantage of what you're describing here is to be able to pull in and actually have face-to-face meetings from time to time, which is something that we didn't actually have on the open source projects I was working on. So I'm very much reminded of that.
In fact, the interesting thing is Martin Fowler wrote an article just yesterday about the importance of face-to-face collaboration for remote teams. And he talked about in that article, it's called Periodic Face-to-Face, it's known as Blicky, about why teams need to build this into their funding, even if they are, you know, miles away from each other, where from time to time, they actually come together in one physical space. So, I mean, for your readers, I would really recommend that they read this article. But can I bring in one little bit of nuance, if that's okay?
Absolutely.
Please, yes.
So one of the things, James Tanier, he wrote this book about effective remote work. And he has this idea of a spectrum of synchronousness. And the idea is that if you start to imagine methods of communication with absolutely asynchronous on the left, an example being a wiki, and absolutely synchronous being on the right, an example being either being face-to-face or a video call, the question to ask yourself is, for every single interaction, is there some way that you can shift a little bit to the left and not lose any of the value? So for example, if you were doing something with a video call, can you do it with a chat? If you were doing something with a chat, can you do it with a recorded video? If you were doing something with a recorded video, can you do it with a collaborative document? If you were doing something with a collaborative document, can you do it with a wiki and not lose any of the value that you were achieving earlier? And what that might unlock for you is some of the benefits that we talked about right at the beginning. You have a little more work-life balance. You have a little more time for deep work. Your knowledge gets shared better. And then the other nuance that I wanted to bring in was that there is value on both sides, right? So asynchronous work gives you a little bit of thoughtfulness. Asynchronous communication gives you a little bit of thoughtfulness. It gives you the ability to go into depth. You're able to focus a lot more, and you're able to do things that future-proof you a little bit, right? So if you write up a decision record, then it preempts that situation where somebody wakes up and says, what the hell is this and why is my project this way, right? That's the kind of situation you're trying to preempt when you write a decision record. On the other hand, with synchronous communication, you're trying to be spontaneous. You're trying to cover a lot of breadth in a short period of time. You're building the connectedness between individuals. And sometimes you have to maximize the moment, right? So if there's a production issue, you don't want to be writing documents at that time. You want a few hands on deck to get the production issue sorted. So we've got to be able to balance the values of both kinds of communication. And that's if nobody takes away anything, that's the point I would like people to take away.
Well, fantastic.
I mean, I do want to add one more thing, since this is, you know, in our podcast about the advantage of writing things down, which is, you know, I have the big focus on learning. And it's not just why is it this way, but to go back later in time and say, what were we thinking when we made that decision? And remind yourself that maybe you had good reasons or maybe there was something you missed. But I think it becomes, in my experience, a very large part of the learning cycle to, after the fact, be able to critique what I had in mind at the time the decision was made. So that's been a very valuable element for me of having actually written documents to record important decisions.
With projects where you have multiple stakeholders, right? You have multiple partners working together. It also becomes a good communication artifact, because then there is less finger pointing, less blame, because you would have socialized this with a lot of people. And there is a record of that decision out there. And everyone's seen it.
Okay. Well, I think we've got fascinating food for thought here. I don't think we have full agreement among the three of us, but if we did, life would be awfully boring, and we wouldn't have the diversity of opinions and ideas that Sumeet is telling us we can get and improve if we actually embrace some async methods. So, Sumeet, this has been very helpful and provocative and interesting. I'm sure it's going to lead to some good debates with and among our listeners. Where could people get in touch with you? Where would they find more, Sumeet? Where would they find the book? If they had questions for you, where would they go?
So the book's available wherever you get your books, Amazon, O'Reilly. It's called The Async First Playbook. I write every week on asyncagile.org, and the only social network that I'm on is LinkedIn. So you can search for me with my name, and I'm there.
Fantastic. Okay. And if listeners want to discuss with us further, they want to tell us, want to tell me, for example, I'm all wet when I say I'm worried about language drift, or if they want to say Sumeet didn't have it quite right when he said write things down, or if you're not a fan of pairing, any of those kinds of things that you want to disagree with us about or ask us more questions about, the best place to find us is on agileconversations.com. And on there, you'll find free videos and articles we've written and our book and lots of other good stuff, as well as email and Instagram, and I think I'm on TikTok and I don't know what else, but all kinds of different ways to get in touch with me and Jeffrey, because we really like hearing from our listeners. And of course, the other way to stay in touch with us is to come back next week when we'll have another edition of Troubleshooting Agile. Thank you, Jeffrey and Sumeet.
Thank you, Scroll.